Hi guys, hope you're well. I must admit, this is a really kind of new experience. I've never done this before. And actually, I was just chatting to Ashley just before we kind of started to kind of talk. And it's always that balance of when you're looking to do something new, you have no idea if it's going to work. It might be a complete failure. The sound might not work. I had a problem with Zoom, which is quite funny, which just came up. But it's one of those things that, you know, if you don't try something new, you never progress. And actually, you know, at least with the kind of the audience that I do have, so now I know that the audio does work because I've just heard it come out on YouTube, which is fantastic. So it's all these little things that I'll know next time, but just, you know, you've got to learn from somewhere. So without further ado, so Ashley, meet everyone meet Ashley. I just want to make sure it works. And then likewise, anyone that actually does get to watch, if you can just leave a comment, and it's just so I know things are working, the sound's working. And then any questions and stuff that you've got, please kind of, you know, send them in. So one of the things I was very keen to do is that recently we had a bit of a change in the world. Obviously we know what happened with kind of coronavirus, but then likewise, you know, for me, from like a business point of view, I think the world has changed. For a lot of people, the world has kind of slowed down. People are now working from home, but then also, you know, there's a lot of clients who've stopped spending money. There's a lot of business owners who have gone from being actually quite comfortable to, you know, suddenly it's a different world we're kind of in. And then actually I've done a few posts where, you know, for me, the need on how companies promote themselves should change as well. I think when, you know, you're going to go through some tough times, and, you know, I think we're obviously in the lockdown at the moment, but I think it will kind of get worse. You know, I didn't want to keep doing the same promotion. And actually, the more and more I was doing my homework, because that's what I try and do, just constantly kind of learn and improve. And I was on a conference call yesterday with a guy called Chris Payton, who I've spoken about in the past. And it was with, you know, a few big multinationals, and they were talking about innovation and how to survive the kind of downturn. But they were saying that companies needed to spend about $100,000 per project on, I think it was 60 projects, to find one that works to help survive. And obviously they were kind of aiming it at, you know, huge multinationals, kind of Unilever, people like that. But actually for 99% of the companies that I know, just real people, it was stupid. It just wasn't realistic. So again, one of the things I was keen to talk about, and, you know, hopefully this is just the start of many kind of things going forward, is just talking to real people about real issues, about real things that are kind of going on in the world. But actually, you know, my background is kind of business strategy. And I just want to kind of unpick how different people's kind of business models work, what they do, with the hope that it inspires others. And it's kind of just, today is the first kind of conversation. And then actually the person I picked is someone I trust who does a lot of this stuff herself, that likewise, if this was a complete car crash, which it could be, I knew that she'd kind of carry me through. So Ashley, if you want to kind of introduce yourself to my audience who might not kind of currently know who you are.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Steve. That's brilliant. So I'm Ashley King. I have so many different interests, but they all have a strong things in common between them, a common thread. So I'm very interested in creativity and communications. So I run TEDx Newcastle University, which is a student society. I'm the president of that society, but also the executive producer of an annual conference. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my roles. I also have a startup called Days Like This Are Sweet, which is all about creative communications and events. And I also am host of Nurture Your Zest podcast, where I get to chat to incredible people from all walks of life, all over the world. And that's a great way to, it just makes me smile so much. It's my passion project. So those are the three main things I would say that I do. And it's just great to be here today and watch you as you start your podcasting and video live streaming journey. And I'm so thrilled to be with you.
No, it's cool. It was funny because I'm trying to think, how did we first meet? Because like just a lot of my audience and background know that I'm basically from offshore energy. So a lot of kind of oil and gas renewables companies, SMEs. And actually it was in October, I decided to kind of, you know, set up on my own. And it was one of those things that I knew that the Northeast had a very big kind of tech sector. But, you know, being honest, although I am an engineer, I knew nothing about tech. And it was one of those things that you look at you know, who does what? Because again, when you're trying to break into a new sector from scratch, you got to start somewhere. And that must have been, there was this chap called Paul Lancaster kept coming up, and I know that you know Paul well, and he might even kind of be watching. And there was a thing called Founders Friday, which some of the people, Anne English in particular, kind of was saying, oh, you should go to this thing. And I was like, oh, I don't know. Because, you know, when you work for yourself, you only have a limited amount of time. And it's one of the things that I do say to a lot of people is almost you want to be very careful about how you spend your time, because you can spend your time on non-value added stuff. So I was always very kind of conscious about going to events that would waste my time, which sounds brutal, but you have to be, anyone should be. And then, you know, so I went to a few, met Paul, really nice guy, and, you know, made some kind of new friends there. And then just in the distance, I'd seen this girl who generally wears red just pop up in different places. And then, you know, I never said anything, never said hello. And then again, there was a Northeast Times breakfast thing, and you were there. And then fast forward a few kind of weeks, you were talking about podcasting, and I had at the back of my mind, you know, I was quite excited. So I had a drive up to Aberdeen. And basically what I did on the 6 hours there and the 6 hours back was listen to podcasts. And it was just trying to get a feel for the medium. What is it? How does it work? But actually, I was listening to a lot of your kind of stuff. And it was actually after that, I was on my way back down near Anik. I just listened to one of your things, and I decided at the time that I kind of, and we've had a separate chat offline about 2 weeks ago, but almost I could recognize your talent in that it takes a lot of effort and skill and balls in some ways to put yourself out there and try new things. That it's something that I, you know, tried and still do try, hence why, you know, kind of you're the first guest. But I recognized both your ability and stuff that you could do. But then likewise, a lot of the people who I speak to who are kind of connections of mine, they sometimes worry about imposter syndrome, lack of confidence, and lots of different things. So I thought you'd almost be the perfect person to kind of just discuss that kind of thing, and just almost, you know, your views on both how we met, but actually how and why you kind of do what you do.
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot there to answer, but I think the first thing that's really important is that you came to me via a private message. First of all, you know, you dropped me a message and said, hi, I've been listening to Nurture Your Zest. I really like it because of XYZ. But also you said things like, you know, I've seen you at various networking events. You know, do you want to grab a coffee sometime, or do you want to say hi at the next one? And I think that, first of all, is a fantastic strategy. So many people don't use LinkedIn to ask. So they don't tell people about themselves. You know, I'm not necessarily talking about sales here, but I'm just talking about making those connections. If you only add the people that you know, or that you know well, or, you know, you just ignore all the requests from people, that's not going to help you at all in finding a bigger reach or a bigger audience. So I would encourage people to accept those requests and, you know, say hello to people. So that was the first thing that I really appreciated about meeting you, Steve. I think it's really important what you said about imposter syndrome with any new project. I have a imposter syndrome every single day, and I often have to overcome that. So, you know, it's things like just thinking, well, when you know what you're good at, and when you're really clear on that, you can be so much more of value to your customers, to your audience, to the people you're going to help. So for me, if you told me a few years ago I would have a podcast, I would think, no way, how would I do that? I don't have the skills, I don't have the talent, you know, what would I even talk about? But I knew that I wanted to talk about real stories of people from all walks of life who have, bring my cactus in here, overcome the prickly situations in life. So adversity, you know, something has happened where they've been stuck, and I wanted to know how they would become unstuck. So by sharing their stories of courage, creativity, curiosity, you know, and how they've nurtured their zest, you know, found their passion for life. So when you're very clear on what you're wanting to share, it becomes so much easier, because you're living a life according to your values, and things start to slot into space. I think that's a huge thing about imposter syndrome. Sometimes it's a great way for us to know that we're a little bit off. We need to kind of do a bit more work to find our path, or as you would say, your roadmap, your strategy needs to be redefined. Because if you're feeling lost, then sometimes it's because we are lost. But sometimes it needs to be that let's just do it and see what happens.
Because I think that's with one of my friends, and I won't name her. She does a like a secondhand fashion blog. So it's about sustainability and how often you rewear different fashion. I spoke to her yesterday. And, you know, I said I'd love to interview, you know, just talk to what I class as real people, because I actually find it incredibly brave what she does. And actually, I also know how hard it is to actually run social media accounts and do it well. So I do it for myself and I do it for other kind of companies as well. But every day, without fail, there are multiple posts on this fashion blog. And actually, just as someone who does it for a living, you know, it's impressive. But I think there's a lot of people that, you know, especially in women, actually, because I signed up to join for the Google program that someone spoke about. You know, it's all about empowering women and actually just trying to give people confidence to do different things. And it was just, you know, it is less common in men that, you know, people, you know, are afraid to kind of put themselves out there. But it's also true that with, you know, you have a lot of people that will happily criticize. And I found this is funny that with, because out of interest, I have 17,500 followers, sorry, connections on LinkedIn, but only about 17,000 followers. So about 400 people unfollowed me, which at the first you think, actually, what am I doing wrong? But actually in the typical kind of bell curve, you're always going to have people that actually resonate with you. And, you know, there's probably the same 15 people that like every single post, and I know who they are, and I will be asking them to kind of interview on this. And then, yeah, there's going to be people that kind of just don't like you or don't get you or think you talk too much. But the thing, especially since I've kind of been working for myself, is that as someone that does have to pay their own bills, if you don't put yourself out there, if you don't go to events, if you don't do podcasts and do video and do graphic design or whatever it is, you're not going to make any money and you're going to lose your house and you're not going to pay your mortgage. And it's, you know, it's not a great situation. So actually, you know, we need, and people need to almost, it is hard to kind of look past and stop worrying about how, what other people think, although it is daunting. But actually, you know, I'd love to be able to kind of, well, part of this is almost, you know, I want to talk to people that do their own thing, who've kind of overcome the hurdles. And again, people, so I only started 6 months ago, but actually people, to make the jump is very brave. And, you know, I almost bottled it a few times to take a job instead. But actually, after I did, and I did a post after the first month, I had about 50 people reach out to me and say, oh, I've always wanted to do the same. I wish I could do it. How did this work? How did that work? Have you registered for VAT yet? That kind of thing. And it's almost, you know, I think you do need outliers to almost help other people make the jump if they want to, or especially at the moment, their current source of income might stop. You know, so actually being able to pick people like My Brains, Your Brains, whoever, I think is actually really kind of valuable. I don't know if you want to kind of expand on that.
Absolutely. Being able to chat to people about their ideas and just, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people is really important. Sometimes as well, you'll meet people who aren't your biggest fans. And I've had that, you know, people I really respect and trust and who are very good in their industry. And I've maybe not had the nicest feedback from them personally, but it's helped me to see a different perspective. So you do need to have people who will tell you the difficult stuff, but also definitely surrounding yourself with people. So I was very fortunate. I was made redundant last year, around this time, actually, just started my business. And I didn't know what to do. I was starting a new course, an MBA, in September last year. So I had a series of months where I needed to think, what can I do during this time? And so I thought, I've got some skills, maybe someone would pay for them. Let's just see how a business might go. And I didn't really put that much thought into it. I just kind of jumped in, which is an interesting way to approach it. But I think going forward, anyone I work with now, I do advise to put more strategy into it.
Yeah.
But well, I was fortunate.
It's a chat that we've had, sorry to jump in, but it's almost, it's the whole essence of what today is. It's fail fast, because it was only, I think 2 weeks ago, I thought, you know what, I've seen people do live streams, but again, it was one of those things, it's, you always have to put your own nuance on it. So what actually used to annoy me was on my LinkedIn feed every day, Joe Blogs is live. Joe Blogs is live. And actually it was just, it was annoying is what it was. And the last thing, you know, you ever want to do is piss off your customers. So part of the reason why I thought, well, actually, I don't want to do that. On just on the company page, I'll just link to YouTube. So loads, a lot of people will say, I know it's better to live stream across all the platforms all the time. I don't want to be that guy that's in people's face. And it's, but you have to put your own nuance on it. And it's something that you'll always have experts who'll tell you how you should do marketing, how you should do podcasting or whatever. But you almost have to, you know, find your own feet and fail fast. So actually part of me wondered and worried that if this was an absolute like shitstorm or just a disaster, okay, not ideal, but next week it'll be better and I'll fix it and I'll learn how to do this, this and this. And then actually I'll tell people what happened just because it'll help them, because then, you know, that's how you kind of build trust with an audience is almost, you know, a lot of people have seen me for 10, 12 years on online. Some of it was pretty shit and I admit that. And actually a former boss told me recently that he didn't like what I did in the former job. He thought it was too self-promotional. But, you know, that was one of the, as you say, you know, the kind of tough learnings that, you know, I took it and I do always listen to what people say. I don't always, you know, I always take it on board, but I don't always just take it verbatim just because you have to kind of forge your own way.
Absolutely. So what you're saying there about taking what people say on board, but also, I also have found that sometimes you're surprised when you start out a business or a new initiative or something like that. So I'm getting a lot of fantastic feedback about my podcast, but also lots of friends, you know, maybe not supporting me, not liking or sharing, or they might watch and then they won't leave a comment, but they won't message or say anything about it. There's just no comment at all. So the reason I mention that is it's quite surprising sometimes when you put yourself out of your box and you start trying something new or different, the reaction from other people can be not what you would expect. Yeah. Sometimes you can have bigger fans who are colleagues or other people that you've met networking, but you can be a bit surprised by the reaction from family and friends. Mm-hmm. So I would say that what you're talking about there is very important. A former boss telling you that sometimes you were too self-promotional, well, that might be the case, but at the same time, that might be more about them and less about you. It might be that they felt uncomfortable that you had the courage and the guts to kind of put yourself out there. You know, at the end of the day, you stuck your head above the parapet and look where you are now. You're doing different things and you went on to other jobs. Yeah. So I do think as well, there's a lot to say there about, you know, owning who you are and what you're good at.
I must say, yeah, in that instance, basically, I won't name kind of companies, but I was getting made redundant from an oil and gas company in the 2014 kind of downturn. And there was a point when I didn't have a job lined up. And it was almost when I was offered the managing director job for a company in Durham, which of course, you know, I was 33 at the time. So as you do, I was delighted. But then likewise, it was a company that not everyone had heard of. So one of the things I am good at is sales, promotion, talking to people. So again, if you're trying to turn a company around, you have to go out and talk to people. So if I have tools that I can use, I'm going to use them. They are different. You know, there's not many people who do this yet, live streaming, because it is scary as anything. But actually, you know, in the context, I was trying to look back. It's like I gave a best man speech 2 years ago. And at the time, it was, I'd wrote loads of kind of rude jokes and I got it all prepped up and stuff. But actually in the room, I was next to someone's grandmother and I decided to kind of wind it right back, which is the right thing to do. But then when I sat down, and obviously I'd had a few kind of beers, but I was a little bit upset with myself. I kind of felt I'd let myself down a little bit, you know, just because everyone wants it to kind of be perfect. And then actually it was about a little bit later, it was almost where, you know, I did my best, you know, and almost you can't ask for more than that. And actually, so now it's almost when, you know, so in a few years time, I look back at this first kind of live stream and it might be garbage, but I did my best for what I had today. And then tomorrow I'll be better. And then the day after. And I think it's just, it's almost a metaphor for business that the, you know, it's getting your minimum viable product out there. It's kind of learning fast and just do stuff, whatever the stuff is, see what people resonate with. And then actually, you know, see what people buy and then adapt and work around it. Conscious we've been talking for a while. I think people would really be interested to hear about TEDx and how it works.
Sure. So TEDx is, obviously there's TED, which is its own huge brand, and that's based in the US, in New York. But as part of TED, there's TEDx. So TEDx is independently organized TED events around the world. So this is run by volunteer organizers. And I think a lot of people are surprised to find out that there's a lot of rules to do that. So you don't just go, I'm going to organize a TED event, you know, TEDx event. You have to you know, first of all, apply for your license from TEDx, talk to them about the kinds of speakers you might like on your stage, the kind of theme you might do, and you really have to curate an experience that is worthy of the TED name and the TED brand. So it's a fabulous opportunity for anyone, but for me personally, it's something I'm really proud of. I really believe in it. I'm very passionate about it. And although I'm a student at the moment, an MBA student at Newcastle University, I also worked there formerly as a staff member. So I'm really passionate about when I finish and graduate, I will still be holding that license and working with students in the future. So okay. I will be helping to coach students in a variety of different skills. So things like curation, so coaching speakers, helping them with their confidence and personal branding and all of that kind of thing. To art or creating stuff, creating the backdrops for the event, sponsorship, raising sponsorship, fundraising, training students and volunteers. So it's really quite a broad range of skills that you develop, but it also, as I said earlier, everything I do, although it's very broad and I have lots of interests, they all fuse together through kind of a common theme, and that theme is bringing people together from different backgrounds and in creative experiences. And that's very much what TED is for me.
Can I ask about how, because it's a question that people are going to ask, is almost if like everyone wants to be famous and everyone has, you know, I know some very senior business people, and almost the first, actually we've discussed this before, the first thing they have in their LinkedIn tagline is TEDx speaker, because, you know, it's a mark of kind of prestige. So how do people apply? How do people get selected to kind of do it?
Exactly. So I would say, depending where you live, look around at what's happening in your city. So if you are, say, living in San Francisco, look at what TED events and TEDx events are happening in San Francisco or wherever you are. So to apply to be a TED speaker, that is a whole different kettle of fish. That's, you've got to be already, you know, on the speaker circuit, you know, really powerful and engaging and a very, I would say, very high level speaker. TEDx is different because it's a smaller event. It's led by volunteers. It is more accessible for many people to go and speak. However, that doesn't mean it's easy. So what you can do is look at what's happening in your city and maybe contact the organizers and see who they're looking for, what are their timescales, what's their application process. For us at Newcastle University, we use video applications because it's quick for us. We get about 120 people interested in an expression of interest to apply. And then we ask them to do a video application. And the reason we do that is because of time management. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to sit and watch all of those videos. But as well,
you can always get a good feel on people's personalities and what they look like and sound like and stuff in video. And, you know, it's a great communication tool because so much of what you see is what they look like, what they sound like, their posture, their tone of voice. You know, so I think it's 93% of kind of communication is visual related, you know, and the tone of voice, that's 37%. But it's almost the, you know, you get that with video, that if it was just a written application, you know, the guy could be a nightmare, but it's, so it makes kind of perfect sense.
Exactly. And we did have a lot of applicants that we loved the idea of their talk. And then when we saw the video, they hadn't put any effort into it. Or in one instance, someone just read looking down at a piece of paper for 7 minutes. So if they can't grasp us via video, how can they grasp the attention of our audience? Mm-hmm. So yes, I would say the best thing to do is to see what's happening in your city or area. As well, you could travel. So if you, say, live in Manchester, you could see what's happening at TEDx Birmingham, TEDx Birmingham University. You know, there are many TEDx events all over, and all of them are run very differently. I would say at TEDx Newcastle University, we run things on a very tight ship because myself and my colleague, Gabrielle, we are the license holders. And for us to get that license, we went to TED Women in California, and I personally paid a lot of money for us to have that license, because you have to go to a TED event if you want a license for 100 plus events, which we did. So in order to put to have that, we have to put on events that are worthy of the TED brand. So I will always say to people, I'm sorry, but you're not the right fit, or actually try again next time, or, you know.
People pay to go, is that correct?
People do pay to attend. Some TEDx events are free, but ours we have to charge because it's a student-led event. Everything is fundraised for. So what we can't do, though, which a lot of people don't realize, you can't be paid as a TED speaker or a TEDx speaker. It's not allowed. So a lot of people think, oh, well, I want to be a speaker for you, and how much am I going to get paid? And it just doesn't work like that. And that's because it's such a big brand that when you get that video, your TEDx video on YouTube, and you're on the YouTube channel for TEDx, I mean, that is an incredible opportunity for visibility. And as you said before, to put those, you know, words in your LinkedIn headline, TEDx speaker, that is like such a big deal for people. So, yeah, we're not allowed to sell anything from the stage, for example. You couldn't have a speaker who's also a sponsor, or, you know, there's a lot of rules like this. And I guess that's why we're quite protective. But it's interesting how many emails and messages I personally get a day saying, I need to be on your TEDx stage. And, you know, what people don't understand is, you know, you come up with a theme, but then you work very hard to kind of curate that experience for the attendees.
So especially if people are going to pay for it, you know, it has to be good.
Absolutely.
It's one of the things that you do see at some conferences where you do see it, especially at awards dinners, where people sponsor and the deal is that they get to hand out an award. And it, you know, for me, there's something there I'm not a big fan of. I think it should be about quality and, you know, depth and real kind of experience if people are paying. It's different if it's a free thing, but I think there's a fine balance to tread there. Related to this, but I'll jump back to the business strategy side about how it all interlinks, because actually we've spoke about in the past about how I actually think our business models are similar, which we'll touch on later. But do you want to talk about your kind of commercial interests, some of the stuff that you do, which make money, just again, with a kind of business related podcast or video or whatever you want to call this? You know, it's almost, I'd like to unpick it, because again, I think there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of people that they just haven't thought of before. So obviously we won't talk about any commercials or anything that you know, you don't want to, but it's more just the concept around how different businesses make money. Is that cool?
Sure. Absolutely. So I started Days Like This Are Sweet when I was made redundant, and I thought, okay, who will pay for my skills and what can I do? So my target audience at the beginning was charities and individuals, things like hen do's, baby showers, but all event focused, festivals, music festivals, you know, designing experiences to bring people together. And I so enjoyed that. But what I found very quickly is I was doing a lot of baby showers, a lot of hen do's and things like this, where I was designing this very classy kind of event. People who come along, have a glass of fizz, enjoy it. And it was, you know, I'd do all the flower arranging and the activities, and people loved it. But I wasn't getting any money from that.
Yeah.
You know, so what I found very quickly is that fail fast method is that I had to actually cut that on the head. So I don't do that anymore. I don't offer baby showers or event design. But what I do now is that if I'm doing a conference, or if I'm running my own events, or if I'm running a festival, I bring all of that design and interior design and all of those elements into what I'm doing. So it's a different kind of offer to just hiring any conference coordinator.
Just to kind of riff off that a little bit, is that I 100% agree with you, because I think with when I gave the talk at the marketing meetup, which I know you couldn't attend, but actually that was back in February, I was trying to make it clear that, you know, it's 90% give or take of UK companies are SMEs, and having worked at a lot of them, you know, some of them are rough and ready, which, you know, isn't to be sniffed at. And actually I encourage people to be very kind of frugal on costs. That's the most important kind of thing to do. But actually, if you can work with someone that can do the event planning, the marketing, the strategy, you know, lots of different things within one person, that's incredibly valuable, because actually to that company, they can employ one person, not four. And it's, but you know, so that talk in particular was actually to do with how people often have a lot of skill sets within themselves that they can do project management, or they can do graphic design or whatever, sales. They're just great talkers to, you know, to people. Well, that is valuable to companies. So often, you know, just it's actually having the confidence to approach people and actually say, look, what are you struggling with at the moment? Do you need an extra pair of hands anywhere? Can I help you with sales or marketing or strategy? Or even look, you know, you want to build a new building, you haven't got any time to work with the architect. I'll do it. And it's almost the ability to solve people's problems. I think people often underestimate what they can actually do. And I think for most people that work for themselves, kind of behind closed doors, a lot of them will admit that they don't necessarily make a huge amount of money or as much as they thought they would. So one of the things I always kind of try and recommend is, you know, look outside the box of what your direct offer was or is, and actually, you know, what else can you offer the same client? And it's the kind of thing that, you know, this is almost where developing skills. I had a chat with someone this morning and she had a business. And whilst she was running the business, she also was very good at tweeting on live events. She might comment when she sees this. And actually, her business model evolved into being more about the live tweeting at events than it was about the original business. But my point is, you almost need to dip your toe in the, you know, in the water every so often just to kind of discover new things. So in terms of how did you, how long did it take after you set up to kind of realize where your revenue was coming from?
It was pretty quick, actually, very surprising to me. So I was doing, as I said, festival management or social media management and all kinds of different things. But what I've noticed is I was always posting on social media about what I was doing. And it was very kind of authentic, very, you know, value led, you know, hi, I'm Ash, this is what I'm up to. But the feedback I got from that was just incredible. So I worked with Coco Charity last year, and one of the events that they run is a celebrity golf day with Steve Cram, who's a famous athlete. And so I was posting about the day and sharing videos and talking about Steve Cram and taking, you know, pictures of him doing his golfing. And actually that won me several clients because I was putting it out there that I was, you know, doing that. And I think as well, people start to connect you in ways that you maybe haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. So it's really important wherever you are in your business cycle to listen to what people are saying. You know, listen to what your audience, your customers, your inquiries are saying. And what I noticed is all my inquiries started to become relating to digital marketing or social media, or how can I create an event that is going to be so cool that people want to tweet about it when they're there? You know, that kind of stuff.
I must say, on events, it was one of the things that recently, you know, again, because it was, you know, I'm a chartered mechanical engineer, so I used to make stuff and I was kind of went the business route. But in terms of looking at, you know, different revenue streams for different businesses, like events, you can make a lot of money because if you charge someone, you know, £300 a ticket, or say TED, the proper TED, big one, you know, how much are tickets? What, £5,000? You know, they're a lot. But if you sell
10,000.
10,000. Okay. And how many people like attend? I know it's in the hundreds. I've seen the videos.
Yeah, it's actually really exclusive. I didn't realize that you can't just go to a TED event. You have to apply. And if they approve you, they'll take the money from your bank card.
See, so what's interesting about the business model behind that, it's the whole exclusivity side. And actually, sports car makers do this. So for instance, if you want to buy a top-end Ferrari, and I mean like the limited edition hypercar Enzo type one, you can't, even if you've got the money, just rock up and buy it. You have to almost earn points over time, buying the cheaper models, and then they invite you to do it. And it's almost, it's the whole thing that I think almost as part of your business model. It's the exclusivity and almost the power that you have to actually help people achieve their goal, like their dream. And actually, I guess TED does exactly the same, that they can charge the premium product, you know, the premium price, because, you know, a lot of their attendees probably are business owners that have a few million quid in the bank. So actually, you know, the concept of being able to, it's the prestige, isn't it, to be able to say to people, I've been to TED, I've been a TED speaker, that it's the badge of honor, that actually, you know, it's valuable. And I think a lot of companies should take the kind of, you know, the value of the lessons from that, and how actually can you make your customers feel special, because it adds massive value to your kind of business.
Sure, absolutely. So Yeah, I mean, TED is amazing the way they do their business model. But I think as well, just any event, I mean, events are really powerful and they're a great way to raise awareness and visibility for your organization. But what we're seeing at the moment is that there are so many other ways to engage, you know, and you asked about commercial interests. I mean, my income stream is mainly events and communications. And actually, it was only as a result of some of those big festivals and things I did that I was able to get a brilliant event last year with Newcastle University, all around the celebrating Malaysian culture, because they have a campus in Newcastle University Medicine Malaysia. So we did a 10-year anniversary event, and what I did is I curated this experience of working with students from the Malaysian Society, you know, getting a Malaysian artist in to teach a dance to students. We had some martial arts, we had music, and we had, you know, a speech from the Vice Chancellor and President, Professor Chris Day. So it was a really beautiful afternoon. And so that kind of stuff really lights me up. That's my passion, but it's not the kind of income stream that I can rely on regularly.
So what
I would say with that is, it's good to have different interests, because if you can add value in different places, and I know you do this as well, Steve, by choosing what you're going to work on, then you have the time for the kind of star projects that you want to do, you know? You can't do everything, but if there is something that you absolutely love, but it's just not a viable income all the time, then that can be your treat. And that's how I see things. You know, I've got some things that I'm super passionate about, but I still need to pay the bills. And so, you know, those are my treat and the things that I love to do when I can. But what I do with those projects is I don't just take on any event, because it's, you know, now I'll only do things that I know I'm going to really add value to, and that are in line with my principles and my skills. And then I can spend.
Because you've only got limited time, you know, that is massively kind of important, because it's really funny. So this weekend, I know it was a bank holiday weekend, but I know we're all locked indoors. But actually, just everything I do, even this like live stream, but I was going to say about my kind of rebrand I did at the weekend, I actually enjoy it. I enjoy the creative. I enjoy figuring problems out. Just before we went live on air, my Zoom wouldn't connect to this camera. It was connecting to the, and it was just, it's an absolute nightmare. But actually, I love the challenge, because I love learning new stuff. It's almost because of this that, and actually me and Ashley spoke about this in the past, is that I always thought I would be doing this when I was 50. So I'm 36 now. And actually, you know, I know even if I was to take another job, or realistically another few jobs before I get to that kind of point, I'm probably at some point going to be working for myself. So almost everything now, including, you know, this, it's the 14-year head start between now and where I'm going to be anyway, just to kind of learn new stuff. But actually, because I actually enjoy doing it, it's not work. And I know this, it's the classic kind of cliche that people either hate, but actually, you know, just, I enjoy it. It's, you know, it's funny, and it's great that you've kind of found your passion. But I think for clients, it does show through. So for instance, with the people that I work with, although marketing is just one of the things that I do, I really kind of throw my heart and soul into it and put a lot of effort, more than I probably should. I always try and over deliver, but I do it because I care. I genuinely care about the, you know, the output. And again, there's a lot of agencies and people that will just take the retainer and they don't give you anything for it. And I think especially as we kind of go more into a potential recession and stuff going forward, it will be the people that care and buy in, and they can almost communicate your passion in a way that's not in a brief, I think is massively important. Before we kind of drop off, it's something I'm really interested in, was that when, obviously, if you can talk about the MBA, because it's one of those things that the, I think part of the reason I kind of work so hard is that it's the failure of underachieving, which I think was, you know, it's something I always had a chip on my shoulder for a long time. I've kind of, you know, got rid of it now, but almost when I'd be on an airplane on like a business flight, you'd flick through and there was always adverts for executive MBA somewhere. And I always, you know, the sparkle is there and I get it, but I wanted to hear from your point of view, you know, what's it been like? Has it been worth it? Would you recommend it? And kind of, you know, where do you think it almost brings extra value to people's careers?
Sure, I'd love to share about my MBA, but I also want to say, Steve, that you have a PhD, so you are certainly not a underachiever.
Anyway.
Okay, in terms of MBA, so I chose to study at Newcastle University. I've always wanted to study there, so I'm thrilled that I chose that institution. I would say it has been so worth it. I am really disappointed the way things have gone with the coronavirus. I've paid a lot for tuition and now can't access the library or, you know, all of the consultancy work we were going to do. We've lost opportunities to travel and study abroad together. However, many other MBA students are in that situation also at Harvard, Stanford, all sorts of other institutions. For me, the best thing about the MBA has been it has given me such a depth and breadth of skills and experience that I didn't realize I was missing. Mm-hmm. You know, I was worried in the beginning as the creative person, would I find it too hard? It's a very corporate environment going into banking industries and things like that. But I would say that it supercharged my skills of being able to talk to people in the corporate sector, you know, and actually find out what they need and use the creative problem solving and the innovative skills in a more corporate way, which is good. It's helped me to get my finances for my business right, because all of a sudden now I understand why and how investment decisions are made and how money works and why if you apply for a business loan, you may or may not get rejected, because I have that understanding now. So in terms of financially and that kind of skill set, it really has supercharged my business. And I would say for anyone thinking about doing an MBA, it's a brilliant thing to do. There's one thing I wish I'd done before doing it. I wish I had been reading the Financial Times or The Economist more regularly, listening to podcasts around that kind of stuff. I think in my MBA, certainly, we've covered a lot of complex geopolitical economic issues mm-hmm. that for me, that has been quite a challenge. But at the same time, it's helped me to think about things in a much more macro external, you know, viewpoint than, you know, the way I would have previously. And I know that for the clients I choose to work with in future, and also for my own business now, that will be a real superpower going forward.
No, I must say it's funny that with for other business schools, so not Newcastle, I remember in the past we've both had MBA students. You know, you can do a project for different kind of businesses I've done had in the past. And actually, it was funny that when you know, you go to the poster presentation evenings and the teams present different ideas, one of the things that almost struck me, which is almost funny, that I'm in the UK. I had a working class background, which means different things to different people. But actually, I'm still quite realistic and quite practical. And it was one of the things that sometimes I think, and this isn't to do with you, but just some students, that they sometimes lack the hands-on practical skills that relate to industry, that I think is the extra, it's what will make or break a lot of the kind of students. Because it's funny that when you go and speak to them, you know, people's mental ability shines through, but then they'll say something which doesn't make sense, or they haven't actually thought through in the real world if someone will actually buy what they're selling. And I think when back in the day when I was, you know, considering would I ever do one, it used to say that you needed a minimum of 5 years work experience. And at the time I probably didn't have that. And I was like, oh, why do you need that? It's, you know, but now I understand it, because you need to know that's not going to work. That'll work. Never going to buy that. And it's that kind of balance. And it's just, but it's still, I've got that glint at the back of my, I can see the value, because it's almost, it's a badge of honor that you can, it demonstrates ability, which I think is really kind of impressive. So just kind of related to that and some of the kind of wider economic things that you've seen, but also your own kind of experience to do with just SMEs, people, entrepreneurs in the Northeast, what kind of trends have you seen, or now what's more realistic, what do you think we'll see more of going forward?
I mean, people have been forced to work in a more digital way. So I definitely think there will be an explosion of digital skills. You know, there's a real thirst for it. People have realized that Zoom isn't so hard. Live streaming is actually easier than they thought. You know,
it's not.
I think
it's not. the stress I've had doing this is an absolute, but now I've cracked it. Touch some wood. It's when I find out on YouTube that it was quiet for the whole hour. But anyway, I think it's like I'd never used Zoom before. I didn't even know it existed 3 weeks ago. And then the first time, there's an organization called NEPIC, which is the Northeast Process Innovation Cluster. And they invited me to a Zoom call and I clicked on it. And it was amazing because you had 49 different faces in front of you. And I think it's that fundamental shift that has almost happened. And actually, I was watching a talk yesterday and almost for these kind of behaviors to embed, almost the lockdown has to go on for a certain amount of time where they become normal, as where to me, it's still a bit of a novelty. You know, so I get up, and because I've worked on Teesside for the last 8 to 10 years, I drive 40 miles, do a full day at work, drive 40 miles back. Now I go 4 meters and this is it. And this is my new kind of world, but it's just, it's fascinating change. But I think one thing that I think is worth kind of talking about, because I think we can kind of drill into a bit more, is that if we assume that there's going to be less money around, you know, I think that's kind of clear. It's almost, how do you feel that companies and individuals, but we'll stick with kind of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, just because that's what we are. How do you feel that they can or should kind of stand out moving forward?
So I think that's a really good question. And actually that's linked very well to what we both do, which is all about, you know, who are you and why are you the person that people should trust? So when you want to buy something or when someone is advertising something, and I even say this to companies I consult with, they're not buying the brand, or they are buying the brand, but they're not buying the company necessarily, they're buying mm-hmm. you, which mm-hmm. is why what you did and you said earlier, you know, talking to businesses when you were new in your role, taking over a business that not many people knew about, that is so important, because people need to have that face and that kind of, they need to know what it's all about. They need to feel some sort of connection to it. There is lots of theories around the emotions we have when we're sold to, the way different people and individuals react to sales techniques. And, you know, some people are very harmony and people focused. And if you try and sell to them, they'll switch off.
But I think it's the way people sell. Because it was, yeah. You know, I've kind of learned this myself the hard way, but almost if people just, and you get it on LinkedIn every single day, where someone's like, "Hi, Steve, thanks for the introduction. Let me talk about blah." And it's just delete, just, it's awful. And actually for me, it sounds bad, but I always equate business development to kind of chatting someone up at a bar. And I'm happily married for 7 years now. I've been with Lisa for a long time, but almost the principle is that if you were going to chat someone up at a bar, you get realistically one chance every 6 months to go up to them, give it your best, compliment them on the shoes or start a conversation. And if this is just a flat out no, the next night at the bar, you can't go back to the same person. So for sales and business development, you need to get your chat up line as good as possible, but actually use it in a way which resonates with the audience, where it's not just a brain dump to kind of sell stuff. You actually want to, you know, demonstrate understanding of their business and what they're going through, but actually, you know, add value, look to solve their pain points, because I've been there myself, is that some of the companies I work with have challenges that they're looking to solve. If someone comes to them and says, "Look, I can solve this challenge," they're probably going to buy it. And I think it's almost the, you know, people need to adapt and learn. So it's not just being confident enough to ask for the sale, but I think they almost need to get, put it this way, I think the better people will rise to the top and the kind of the crappier ones will just sink off. But, you know, I'd love to kind of get your thoughts and just how you've found, like, how do you find sales? How do you, you know, do you find it easy?
Actually, that's a great question. And my answer is no, I don't find it easy. I find it easy with sales in the sense that I don't sell. So I know that that's a great way for me. I'm spending more time learning about sales because I want to start making those asks, because I see people that I work very closely with and who are very good and we've got a great relationship hiring other people, doing stuff that I can do sometimes. And I think, well, I never asked for the sale, so how could I ever be bothered? Yeah. So that is something I'm moving towards. But what I would say is, I'm really fortunate in that, you know, last year I brought in more than I thought I would, and I had targets and I smashed them. And what I would say is all of that was by adding value, by giving. You know, I attracted people to me who then wanted to work with me. So, and also strong calls to action. So I might not necessarily sell, but I might say, hey, if you need some help with anything, mm-hmm. you can drop me a message and here's my email.
It's being at the table when people want to make a decision. I think it's a big one.
Exactly.
Because actually what was quite yeah. funny is that from, you know, my last few jobs have been, you know, quite well paid. But when I kind of decided to make the jump with my wife's kind of permission to start work for myself, luckily I did have a cash buffer, and I would recommend anyone that does want to work for themselves to have cash there just to help you. You're going to burn through it. But actually my target was actually to earn 18,000 in my first year, which, touch on wood, I'm going to do. But actually it wasn't about being greedy or overly ambitious. You know, some people, and actually I don't think we should touch on it, but you know, you've mentioned in the past about how, you know, people have big ambitions and it's almost how you strive towards that. But likewise, they also still need to be realistic. And it's just, where I'm kind of going with this is that when I was trying to, you know, talk to friends about, should I even start on my own or not? You know, there's a few people I kind of genuinely trust. And I was just saying, look, am I just being an idiot? What am I doing? You know, and they said, well, look, realistically, if it doesn't work, you know, we'll get another job. And I was like, you know, that's fair enough. But then the big one for me, it's almost the personal pride point of view, is that I knew that at any one time, the dream scenario is to have 9 retained clients. That's my goal. So the stats kind of tell that at any one time, it's about, I think it's 3% of customers are ready to buy. So I knew that if I approached 300 people, that hopefully would at some point, you know, lead through to my 9 kind of retained clients. But obviously you've also got to get realistic. You've got different factors going on. There's an oil, depression at the moment in the oil price. And obviously now this has happened. But my target was to actually approach and speak to 1,000 customers. And, you know, that's genuine face-to-face individual approaches. And actually, if I was to make, you know, put in that amount of effort, even if it doesn't work, I actually don't mind. Sorry, it's my wife bringing me a cup of tea. Thanks, Lisa. You know, I actually don't mind hanging up the laptop, actually kind of giving it up, because for me, I've done my best. And I think that's almost the big thing is that, you know, this live stream, I think I saw there's next to nobody watching, which again is fine because we're just learning. But the point is, as of this conversation right now, have I done the best I could? Yes, I have. But then next time I'll get better. And I think, but my point is almost when we're talking about people who work for themselves, you know, if sales figures and revenue targets aren't quite where you want them to be, how many people are you actually approaching? Because for me on my sales pipeline, and like the free sales pipeline tracker thing on my website, but almost, you know, I'm up to 460 people that I've spoke to. And again, it's harder now, so I've knocked it back a bit, but the plan is still to get to 1,000. And then if I still can't make the business work, I will happily go back into a job if anyone will have me. But it's you need to hustle. And it's, you know, I'm busy now, but almost I did spend days where I just approached one after the other, because you have to. And it's that, you know, it's all of the unseen things that people, when they run their own business, have to do just to survive, that actually, you know, I have a lot more respect for anyone that does this if they don't just complain and they properly work hard at it. And, you know, that's almost when people are, so you were the podcast and, you know, you were looking to innovate and do different things and different themes and whatever. It's just, it's harder to keep evolving than it is to stay the same. And it's, it's fascinating. So just to kind of wrap up, because we're, you know, nearly kind of at the hour, one of the questions which I love to ask, and I think it's something that, you know, I think people will get genuinely kind of value from, is that if you were to give advice to your younger self, and you can pick whichever age or an age range or whatever you kind of wish, what would it be?
I'll keep this one short because I know we're running out of time, but I had a traumatic event happen to me when I was 20. My best friend was murdered, and I'm okay now, but it was a very hard time. And I actually quit my journalism degree that I always wanted to be a writer and a broadcast journalist. So it was a hard time, but what I found is at that time, I stopped writing. I stopped writing for about 9 years, And it's only recently that I've started writing again, started blogging, started doing social media, just sharing my thoughts on things that matter to me. So I would say, if I could give myself advice at that time, I would like to say, stop, you know, don't stop writing, you know, keep going. But actually, I needed that break. So I think for anyone, something that's really powerful is you are exactly where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that helps me every day. I think that, you know, if I'm going through something or if I'm feeling a certain way, or, you know, if, say, your business is not going the way you want it to, sometimes you have to really consider, well, are you putting the work in that you should be, or are you spending your time on the right things? But also, sometimes you need to be in that difficult place, because if you don't experience that, you can't contribute in the way that you need to.
Yeah.
And that's been something that's been really powerful. I'd like to leave your listeners with something that really resonated with me yesterday. I like to read every day, and I read Brendan Burchard is a well-known speaker around the world. He speaks on high-performance habits, and he has a great book. But one of his quotes is about success tax. And it's basically, many of us want the success, but we're not prepared to pay the price of doubt and failure and, you know, fear. We're not prepared to sit with those feelings. And so actually, if you are starting a business and feeling sad or whatever it might be, weird, frustrated, that success tax is the pain you have to go through for your success. And that has really helped me.
Because I think one of the things that I know you're on Instagram, same as I am as well, but there's, you get, I think, too many people and too many memes and the GIFs where they talk about, oh, the path to success isn't this, it's that. But I think the problem is that's not personal. You know, that's just a graphic that you kind of relate to and it might be motivational. But I almost think part of the reason why I wanted to do this, but like talk to real people in a way that, you know, I'd have the same conversation in a coffee shop, is almost because it's when it makes it real to people I know. Does that make sense? Because yeah. Then it's not just a stupid concept. Because this is also the other thing as well. Very few people will actually admit when they're struggling. And I mean admit publicly. So, you know, someone I know once admitted that, I'm trying to think how to phrase it, but almost, she thought everyone else was doing brilliantly. You know, she was like, I'm not earning as much money as I thought. I'm finding it harder. Everyone else seems to be magical on a pedestal, polished, whatever. And it was just because it was everyone's polished kind of Instagram type, whatever, but it wasn't genuine. And I think it's one of the things that when I talk to people, almost, I think most people have a very good bullshit meter and they can tell when someone's taking the piss or not, that, you know, you can't fake, or for me, you can't fake video. So there's lots of people that I will see interviews and just at the back of my, you know, gut, I just don't like them. I just don't trust them. And, you know, that's where, again, different people resonate with different people. But I think this is why this kind of format, you know, there'll be people that have never met you before, but they might know me. And then the fact that we've had a conversation, they might add you and they might start to connect. And actually, you know, if you can do it, they can do it too. Because it's, you know, and that's why I was very keen to kind of start having these conversations. So Ashley, that is about an hour. Thank you very much for your time. How did it go for you? So basically, you know, Ashley does this for a living and does many, 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 many podcasts and interviews and stuff. This is my first ever one. So apart from the Zoom camera failure, how's it gone?
It's been great. Really nice to chat to you. Very interesting questions. I'm really delighted to have been your first guest. And I know as well that you will go on to have many more great guests. And I'm looking forward to watching. And I think as well, it's so good to just get started. And that's the most important thing. I have to say as well, I think you've put a lot of time and attention into your sound and your equipment and your setup. And I think some people would start with less. So, but I think as well, that just exemplifies who you are and the level of attention you pay to your clients and your customers. And you do that across everything you do. So it's a really brilliant strength of you. But it's so nice that you put so much attention into all of that as well.
Oh, cool. So is there anything you want to plug? You just want to talk about, you know, just stuff you've got coming up, anything else?
Well, I have some exciting news in that I have found that after podcasting for nearly a year, actually I'm starting to get a lot of requests to teach other people how to podcast or
Wow, nice.
how to raise the visibility or branding or all sorts of different things.
Make sure you charge for it.
I am. So what I'm going to be doing now is I'm actually writing some content for training courses that people can buy online, watch on their own at their demand, and then if they want to work with me, they can pay to do that. But that is a new income stream for me and my business, but it's a great way as well to give back, to teach people that it's not so scary. So yeah, that's coming soon. I don't have a date yet. I'm working on it as quick as I can. But yeah, I'm really excited to be adding that as a new opportunity to work with more people in more locations. That's Perfect. Going to be great.
Because it's what we were saying before, is that it's when people look at what talents you've got, you know. So when you originally wanted to be a broadcast journalist, you probably never knew, because I don't have a very good voice. I know that. It's my voice. It's fine. But there are certain people that just do. And, you know, in many ways that you're born to talk in a nice way, but actually, you know, it's looking at your skill sets and that developed over time. And then you realize, actually, I can charge for that. And then almost from a business point of view, you know, I'm also very conscious that I like to learn stuff myself to be able to do it myself. So I do everything myself. But actually, there's still a cost that when I knew I wanted to set this up, I'm not billing other stuff. So actually, there's a huge time it takes to learn things from scratch. So actually, you know, the ability to learn from people like yourself on just how to do it quicker, and it might take someone's learning curve from 5 days down to two, but actually for the price of whatever the you know, the course is, it's probably, you know, more than worthwhile. And it's that kind of thing. So now I'm delighted for you. Thank you for being my first guest.
Thank you.
You know, hopefully there'll be many more. There's a few people I've already kind of reached out to, and, you know, I just want to kind of help bring out the people behind all the businesses, and, you know, kind of share some people that you might never have met before. And then, you know, we're going to clip this up and use it on Instagram and lots of different things as well. So Ashley, thank you for your time, everyone. Thank you for watching. I will check the questions and I'll send them through, and we might do like a follow-up at some point as well. And yeah, that's my first live stream done. So there you go. Thank you. Thanks, guys.